My name is Andrea Swenson, and this is the first ever episode of The OK Show. On this episode, you're going to hear from a Minneapolis musician named Charlie Van Stee, who's going to open up about some personal struggles that he's been dealing with, all the while recording new music and releasing a new solo album. Before we get to that conversation with Charlie, though, I just wanted to take a minute to tell you a little bit about myself and also a little bit about what I want the show to be. I'm a music journalist in the Twin Cities. I publish my writing and do some on-air reporting at The Current, a public radio station here in St. Paul. I live in Minneapolis, and I find myself bouncing all over the Twin Cities in search of new sounds and new people in the music scene. So why is this called The OK Show? Well, at first I thought it was, you know, kind of a cute little self-deprecating name. You know, it's not that great of a show, but it's okay. But then it occurred to me that one of the phrases that I find myself saying the most is, it's going to be okay. Like so many people, music is an incredibly important part of my life. And I mean, clearly, I work at a radio station. It's part of my job. It's what I do for fun. But beyond that, I've always turned to music in these times when I'm experiencing intense emotions and struggles, whether I'm sad or I've lost someone. Even when things just flat out suck, somehow music takes the edge off. Music makes it okay. So when I started thinking about developing this podcast, I knew I wanted to use this format to get at something that I wasn't quite reaching in my written interviews with the artists that I admire. I wanted to dig down into that gut level, heart level connection that we have to music and that the artists have with their own craft. Where does that emotion come from? And how did the artist go about turning it into a song? You know, what's that process like for them to be so open about their feelings and desires to put it all out there for us to consume, download, discuss, tear apart on Twitter, etc.? I feel like we get into this pattern in my profession, music journalism, where we talk to musicians in kind of a rote and predictable way. You know, we do the interview because they're in a promo cycle for the album, and we talk about all the things that you could probably learn just by reading their press release. It feels redundant and really not very enlightening for anyone involved. So for the lack of a better way to describe it, I wanted to conduct a series of interviews that attempt to be real. To talk about real things that happen to artists in their lives, hear their stories from their own mouths in their own words, and because these are real conversations, and because I am also a human, I might end up sharing a few of my own stories with you as well. Starting with this one, I guess, if you read my stuff, you might already be aware that I live with an anxiety and depressive disorder, which is a very dry and clinical way of saying that sometimes my heart feels like it's been strapped into a roller coaster without its permission. You know, I'm often navigating between intense swings of this jittery, kind of heart-racing adrenaline, or a bottomed-out, fuzzy, black pit of blah, where I can't manage to do anything. And I do manage it for the most part, and I do that by listening to music, by writing about music, and by playing music. I have definitely had moments in my life where music quite literally saved me, and I know that I'm not alone in that. So when I was thinking about guests that I wanted to invite onto this show, one of the very first people that popped into my mind was Charlie Van Stee. Charlie is the lead singer and songwriter in a band called Van Stee. He has an impressive ear for pop melodies and creating these beautiful, lush, psychedelic sounds. His band's single, We Are, is probably the song most well-known from that group. It was so popular, I think it ended up being in rotation on The Current for about 6 months. We just couldn't get enough of it. Charlie also suffers from depression. And his openness about his struggles on Facebook have connected him to his fans and other musicians in town in this really deep, profound way. So Charlie went through some really serious challenges this summer. I mean, that's putting it lightly, I guess. It got to the point where Charlie had to be admitted into a mental health treatment center. Boldly, he wrote about this in great detail and shared beautifully what he's gone through in this essay that's published on The Current's website right now. You can find it over at the local Current blog, blogged@thecurrent.org. And he wrote and recorded a 7-song EP throughout all of this as well, which he recorded at home and just released for free on his website last month. So for our interview, I had to ask Charlie, how did all of these things seem to happen at the same time? How did he get through this experience? How did he put an album out in the midst of this experience? And what that process was like for him as a creative person and also as a person who struggles with his mental health. For our interview, Charlie drove out to the suburbs, to my parents' house, actually, where I was living temporarily in the midst of moving. I mean, that's life, right? You just have to keep moving. You have to keep scheduling those interviews, even when everything's kind of up in the air. So here's our conversation. It took place around my parents' dining room table. Also features cameos from my parents' dog, who would not stop barking. Apologies in advance. And my dad, who shows up about halfway through. Enjoy. Today, I am joined by Charlie Van Stee. Hi, Charlie.
Hey, Andrea.
Well, we have a lot to talk about today.
I'm a little bit nervous, to be honest. You feel like you want to be a crusader and talk about this stuff, and then you're driving over here and thinking about what the reality of really talking about this stuff is. So I'm excited to be here. Nothing else helps more than being able to actually talk about this stuff. So
absolutely. When did you first realize that something was wrong?
Something was off. I think I've had depression issues since elementary school, probably. And I saw a therapist off and on after my father passed away in 97. I was in a car accident with him, so I kind of had some PTSD stuff to deal with. And, you know, at like 16, my mom put me through the grief counselors, and you go to grief camp with other kids who are your age, and it's all pretty surreal. I'm not sure that helped a ton. I mean, I understand why she did it, but I think I've been in and out of therapists quite a while. But until recently, I think it was manageable, and it's built up enough over the years to become something that was clearly unmanageable within the last 2 months.
Okay. So, in your past experiences, when you started playing music, did you find any overlap between your experiences with mental health and either the songs that you were writing or just the experience of music as it related to your health?
Yeah, the writing of the music certainly helps, just because you're expressing yourself. And I think that the biggest issue was people telling you about how to have a music career, which often involves networking and talking to other people. And when you have anxiety and depression, getting out just to hang out with people socially is difficult. But then when you have another piece where you feel like you're supposed to be this fun, loving, easy person to get along with while also talking about this product that you're trying to release that's also super for like personal in a lot of ways. I think that's where I ran into the most problems and still kind of have issues with that. So
that makes a lot of sense to
me. So the creative part's the easy part for me. It's the other stuff that everyone tells you need to focus on that I tend to have problems with.
Yeah. So. At this point in the conversation, the dog barking started driving us insane, so we took a little break, and we're going to listen to one of Charlie's new solo songs. It's called Red Car.
Thank you.
okay. We just had to take. We just had to take a break so we could get the dog to stop barking, and the dog is now sitting in Charlie's lap.
Oh, that's all right. It's the little things in life.
So, okay, just to get back into it, tell me what happened 2 months ago.
Well, so like I was saying, in December of 2013, my mom passed away pretty suddenly, and so all of a sudden I was left with this situation where I didn't have parents anymore in my early 30s, and I think it scared me to some degree, but I had already kind of developed this pattern of avoiding death, numbing to it, not really being able to process it. So when that happened, I think it just kind of pushed me over the edge over the last year. And then, about 2 months ago, I was at a Lynx game. I noticed that I was starting to kind of withdraw from my daughter, withdraw from people just in general, started to have these really isolating behaviors. And so I proactively went and saw a doctor and said, I just need some sort of antidepressant, something that's going to help me kind of level out a little bit because I'm losing this time with my family. And so I started taking a medication, and then I reacted to it kind of poorly. And I remember being at a Lynx game with my wife and my aunt, and everything seemed to be moving, like, in slow motion. I was really confused and didn't know where I was very well. I was forgetting conversations that I had, and I just didn't realize, I guess, that I had become kind of such a mess at that point. Lost all the color in my face. I wasn't eating anymore. So after that game, my wife said, we're taking you to the hospital now. So I went in there, and then they did some tests on me and found out that it wasn't really the medication necessarily. So I think it had just become apparent that I couldn't handle this depression and anxiety. Physically, I couldn't handle it anymore. So I was put into this inpatient program, and yeah.
So what was going through your mind when you were in there? Did you know, for example, how long you were going to be in there? And did you have any kind of immediate goals or needs that you were trying to meet?
I think the difference between the way I'm thinking now about it versus when I first went in, I didn't want to go to talk therapy. I was angry. I didn't want to deal with any of it. It was too painful to really think about. So I still remember, like, basically saying goodbye to my wife when she dropped me off. She's like, well, you know, she's teary and like, I guess I'll see you later. And you're going, yeah, I guess. And you're in these, like, maroon scrubs and it's just, you don't really know what to think. I really literally felt that feeling of rock bottomness where it was like, where else could I be that would be worse than this, you know? So I was scared. I didn't want to talk about anything, like I said, and I still don't, I haven't really faced everything, you know?
Yeah.
So.
When was this?
I think it was at the beginning of July.
Okay.
So pretty recent still.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
So in the middle of all this, you have music.
Yeah.
Where did the music come from? Was it something you were working on already?
Yeah, I had, there were some tracks that I'd built up as possible second album Vance D stuff. And some of them we tried to work out, and they just never really sounded right, but I never wanted to let them go. And then probably half of them I wrote within the last, like, 3 months. So I was still writing. I played one show like 2 days after I got out of the hospital, intake, and it was terrible. It was we played all right, but it was like the seventh song in, I just turned to everybody and I said, I'm done, I can't play anymore, that's it.
Yeah.
And everybody was really supportive, but it was scary to feel that amount of anxiety on stage, because generally I feel pretty comfortable there, and I was relying on that a lot.
But yeah.
I showed up to the venue as the Kitty Cat Club. I remember I showed up 2 hours early, just so I could read a book on the porch. It's like, I'm just going to be present here for a while. I just didn't know what was going to happen, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Every single The cats, they knew to run away. The fish had no choice but to stay. The kids.
In your experience of, you know, being in a band and being around other musicians and booking shows, is this something that you have felt comfortable talking about with other artists?
I didn't before. And then once I learned this in therapy about myself, that I know how to play a role. I feel comfortable. I can do public speaking. I do any of that stuff pretty comfortably. But one-on-one time with my family members is chaos in my head. So playing that role, like I feel comfortable posting things on Facebook for some reason because it's somewhat impersonal, but you can also, it's a little bit like a journal sometimes. And so I started just getting messages from people that I knew, but also people that I never met before in the music community that would say, I totally relate to what you were saying. It's just nice to hear somebody talking about it. I mean, I got so much encouragement from people that are clearly going through the same issues. So that was, it was amazing in that respect.
So I'm curious about the relationship between, I guess to simplify it, bad thoughts and doing something like making music. Do you feel like there's a point when you're creating or when you're playing where things kind of fade away?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I usually feel that with the music itself versus the words. I'm pretty guilty of writing songs about other things that are fictional as opposed to writing about what I'm really going through. It's a good way to avoid stuff. But as far as like the melodies and the music itself is really where I feel stuff, where I can write a piece of music and sit in it for an hour and just keep playing it over and over again and feeling it. And that's when you can kind of know that you can trust that artistic gut of like, I love this and I feel this, and whether or not somebody else feels it or not, I know I feel it and it's a real thing. And usually it does connect with other people because of that.
Well, tell me more about this batch of songs that you put out. First of all, I guess I'm curious, you know, why did you want to release it just under your own name instead of as Vansty?
Vansty as like an entity involves a lot of people, even though it's got my name on it. It's fairly collaborative and fairly standard in like the way that it's recorded for modern music today. So there's a producer, there's an engineer, there's people with a lot of opinions. It takes hours and hours of overdubbing, and it just, there's a lot of pieces, and sometimes it can be a little sterile sitting in those studios. Whereas these songs I wrote in the moment, they have blips and mistakes in them, and it's always the way that I've written demos. Like, I have a version of We Are that's in that lo-fi version, which is kind of interesting to listen to sometimes. Sometimes a little painful at times. I remember I brought a lot of these new songs that are on Slow Mo Jazz Hands to Jake Hansen, who was going to produce the second Vansty record. And he kept being like, well, why don't you just put them out like this? And also it was interesting to release something that's totally contrasting from Vansty, because Vansty is proud of, I mean, we're halfway through the new record and I love it. It sounds great. But this is something that's the opposite. So I want to be a diversified person and an artist. I want to do felt work. I want to do writing. I want to do, you know, I want to do all sorts of stuff. So it's just a way of doing that, I guess.
Yeah.
To being more versatile.
Pancakes and dried out the kosher.
Remember when I said that this was at my parents' house? Well, this is the point where my dad came home, and his enthusiasm about meeting Charlie was so sweet, I just had to keep in a little part of that conversation as well. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you? Cool. I'm Charlie.
Hi, Charlie. I'm here.
Nice to meet you.
So you have a band?
I have a band.
So
that's
you play
right.
Guitar?
I play guitar and I sing. That's right. Oh. Do you?
No, I'm just a hack.
No, oh, come on.
I have
we all feel that way about ourselves.
I have a big
thank you.
I have a big collection of cheap guitars, and now I'm in a uke phase.
You are. I was wondering if that was Andrea's or not.
No, I just ordered that from China.
Wow.
Do you have a dog?
I do. I just got one. His name is Nugget. I got him from the Humane Society. He's a bulldog Shar-Pei mix. He kind of looks like a really thin pit bull. He's so sweet. I mean, he's pretty, I don't know, he's like 40 pounds maybe, and he'll just sit on your lap and
I think he's
just cuddle up. He's the cutest thing. Yeah.
Yeah, this guy does that too. I call that lovey time.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, he's full of it. So we're lucky enough to be pretty close to the Minnehaha Dog Park.
So, back to the interview.
Yeah.
My dad took the dog downstairs, and Charlie and I were left alone to return to our conversation. So I guess one thing I've been wondering about as we've been talking, you know, you mentioned that when you're writing lyrics that you kind of stray away from having it be very literal and go into kind of more of a conceptual thing and let the emotions speak more. Now that you've gone through this experience and, you know, you're recovering from kind of this crisis mode, do you think that you will write about it?
I think I meant almost the opposite when I was saying that, where what I do is I'll write stories that are pretty specific, but they're not about me at all. Like, they'll be, like, on the new record, there's a song called The Hair, which is just about this person that rubs these magic seeds into their scalp, and it's this kind of, like, melodrama where the hair grows and grows and grows and takes over this entire town, and then it's about what the town decides to do with that hair. And so I write stories like that, or I wrote the song about Gene Wilder and how I wished he was my father, and so it's easy to kind of, like, divorce myself from actual emotion in a way. But on the new Van Stee record, there's one song called We Don't Need a Friend, and that song to me was one of the toughest ones I've written, because it's about shunning everybody in your life because you just don't want them there. You feel this kind of anger within you, and it's about writing about home, but I notice that when most people write about this idea of home, it's like this safe place that they write about, but I wrote about it as exactly the opposite, where it was this place where you feel sick in a way. So, yeah. It was about this idea of, like, every time you walk into the door, you have to give away yourself, like you have to give away the love that you felt like you owned, but you don't own it. So you'll be able to hear it when the record comes out, but it was probably one of the most personal things I've ever written that was not about just somebody else, but it was this feeling of, like, having problems in my marriage, not feeling comfortable with myself, not wanting to spend time with my daughter. Just feeling this, like, you drank lukewarm water feeling when you're supposed to feel like you're comfortable in those places, but I just wasn't comfortable anywhere. And I didn't want to talk to my family about it, Everything felt really trivial with my friends. It just felt very pointless. So I'm getting better about it sometimes, but it's painful to sing about it on stage sometimes. So I think the other writing is a little bit of a shield from that.
I see. Yeah. What do you think is the barrier for you in being able to talk about it, like with your family?
That persecutor role of, I mean, I saw it at the hospital all the time where people would get phone calls and have to talk to their family, and you would see them crying, and you could tell that they were just getting yelled at by their families. And, I mean, it was just a perfect example of that type of stigma that still exists, because it is tough for everyone. Like, they don't know. I mean, I'm fortunate enough to have a lot of supportive people in my family, but that doesn't mean I'm good at accepting it or understanding how to use it.
Right.
So it's shame and embarrassment. Like, you just don't have your stuff together, and that's admitting that. And I'm 33 years old, and it seems to be getting worse. So, you don't really know how to... You know, everybody else in my family seems to have great jobs and has it together pretty well. So, yeah.
It can be hard. I'm 32, and I feel like I got through my 20s, and it was like, you expect your life to be kind of tumultuous in your 20s because you're still figuring it out. And then, you know, I settle down, get a stable job I'm married to, and then you have to really start to deal with all the stuff that you've been pushing to the back of your head, you know, as all this other kind of surface stuff was taking the attention. I feel like the drama has died down, but then the mental struggle has become greater.
Have you tried to fight that coming to the surface in a way?
I have all kinds of strategies.
Sure, yeah. And at a certain point, I don't know if it was for you, but it just... can't avoid it anymore.
Oh yeah,
I wish I could.
I think the breaking point for me was I was losing entire days, you know.
Wow. Yeah.
Either depression or so anxious that I couldn't move.
Oh my gosh.
Call it like tired wired, like where I just lay in bed in a ball, like so anxious that I can't actually do anything. And then I'm just like thinking about everything that I'm supposed to be doing, and it's like
a circle.
Yeah. It's not.
You feel bad about wasting your day, which makes you want to waste the day further. Mm-hmm. It's this shame circle.
Yes. Yeah. Shame circle is a good way of putting it.
It is. Yeah. When I was an outpatient, one of the therapists told me something interesting. She said, everybody comes in here and when they talk about what they want to get out of this program, they say, I want to learn how to cope with all of these problems in my life. And she says, that's great and all, but actually what we're really trying to teach you is to feel those things earlier. Mm. To not cope with those problems, but to feel those problems when they happen and deal with them on the spot, as opposed to learning how to avoid them. You know what I mean?
Right.
That was a hard thing to hear.
Yeah. I think for me, not to make this all about me, but...
I think it's mostly about me, it sounds like to me. It could be a little about you.
You know, my most recent journey has been trying medication, and I didn't realize how much anxiety had dominated my life since I was like 5. And it just didn't really occur to me that that was like my normal was not actually like where it needed to be, and that taking down that anxiety a notch actually like just made me think way more clearly about everything and more rationally. And so I do feel like now, just with a little bit of the edge taken off, I can think a little more clearly and react to things better and faster, and not let it just kind of build up under this like weird haze of just feeling horrible all the time.
100%. That's exactly what that's meant for.
Yeah. So that's my deal.
No, but I mean, it does change your life, really.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Well, thanks so much for talking to me about everything.
I mean, we just scratched the surface, but, I know.
It could go on for a long time.
Yeah.
But I guess, a final thing that I would ask you as you've gone through this experience is, what would you say to somebody who this resonates with but who hasn't taken any steps to get help or maybe doesn't even know where to start? What would you say to someone like that?
I would say talk therapy is worth a shot. The group therapy for me was incredibly enlightening, but that's probably a little much for some people. If you're scared about antidepressants, even just taking an as-needed anxiety medication is generally not something that's going to mess with your head a whole lot, and it can really bring you a ton of relief. So just being open to a little bit of progress with help and not feeling ashamed about it and actually using some of those things, you'd be surprised how much relief you'll get from it. So,
yeah,
you know, you're worth it.
Yeah. And sometimes, like you were saying, you know, just being able to connect with other people about it. You said you've gotten so many responses to what you've posted on Facebook, and we're going to be publishing an essay that you wrote that's just so powerful about your experience. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of power in that, too, of just being able to connect with people and say, like, hey, this is happening to me, too, and hopefully it's going to be okay.
Yeah. Well, it just the process that it takes for someone to think, like, read your post, think about themselves, go to their computer or their phone, type out a message that they're thinking about, and to send it to you is a process in itself. I mean, mm-hmm. that's a brave thing. It's not a flippant thing for someone to send you a message that gets so personal like that, you know? So
absolutely.
I'm proud to be a springboard for that. Anyone can email me anytime.
And we'll put all your information on the website.
Sure, that'd be great.
Track you down and listen to the record and follow all of your movements on Facebook in awesome. A not creepy way.
There you go, yeah. Absolutely.
Well, thank you, Charlie.
I appreciate you having me. It was great.
Well, that's it. That was the first episode ever of The OK Show. My name is Andrea Swenson. Thank you so much for checking out the podcast. And thank you, of course, to Charlie Van Steve for sitting down with me and being so open and awesome and talking about these very real experiences that a lot of people out there are dealing with. You can find more about Charlie and his music over at vansteeband.com. I will also put a link to it in the landing page for the podcast, which is over at blog.thecurrent.org. Stay tuned next week. You can download a new installment of The OK Show. My second guest is going to be the fabulous Mary Beth Mueller, the woman behind Kill Cancer. Take care.